The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
Now the post-election dust has settled a little, what does the result mean for farmers?
I think what farmers are very much looking for is a clear direction of travel in terms of what's going to be expected, what's going to be required around net zero, and focus perhaps on some of the grant aid to encourage investment in the sector to set that pathway forward.
How are the crops looking as we near harvest? We'll have a spud update, something new from New Holland, and how did Open Farm Sunday go this year?
9,100 more visitors than we had last year, 180,000 people.
Plus a look at the markets, and after yet another wet one, is the weather getting any more like summer this week?
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
We'll find out at the end of the show. Hello, I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, an investigation's been launched into DEFRA's emergency neonicotinoid authorisations for last and this year. The Office for Environmental Protection is seeking to determine whether there were serious failures in DEFRA's compliance with environmental laws. This follows a complaint submitted by environmental law group Client Earth. Thieves have stolen 126 sheep from a worksop farm. All have a blue mark on their shoulders and due to medication are unfit for human consumption for a period of time. Any information, please call the police on 101, quoting reference 14/118707/24. And a tragic farm fire in East Yorkshire's killed around 400 pigs and totally destroyed the barn in which they were housed. And 10 days on from the electing of a new government, we have Steve Reid as DEFRA Secretary and Daniel Zeichner as Farming Minister. Both continue their shadow positions, and we'll get some post-election thoughts from Virgin Money's Brian Richardson later in the programme. Another huge Great Yorkshire Show last week, the final one for Director Charles Mills. We wish you well for the future, Charles. All sold out, 140,000 people there despite the weather. Definitely a few good days for the Welly Boot and Brolly sellers. And while I was there, I had a chat with New Holland on the Russell stand to find out about their new-ish T7 PLMI range with sales manager Andy Petrie.
It's our newest offering in our T7 long wheelbase model lineup. PLMI is precision land management, so the tractor is really focused on that precision farming, GPS, getting the most out of the tractor, you know, getting more uptime is the biggest thing, the biggest buzzword. Another new thing with the range is we've gone to bigger axles, so something we've never been able to do in the past is offer what we call a class 48 wheel and tyre, so we can put a bigger wheel and tyre on there with a taller sidewall profile, which gives something that we've never been able to offer before, so it's something that customers have been wanting for a while.
Is this a brand new range, or is it replacing something that was already there?
So it's replacing something that's already there. So our long wheelbase tractor, it's a heritage product we've had for a number of years now. And over the years, we've revamped it with various different things. So we've the new cab, which we've introduced on this tractor, on this long wheelbase range. It's just a bigger cab. It's the quietest cab on the market. So it's 66 decibels in the cab when you're working at full tilt. And it also has a couple of other upgrades along the way as well.
And what's actually in the cab in terms of electronics and so on?
Oh, everything. What's not electronics? So the tractor actually comes with a subwoofer now, so you can spec a subwoofer in the cab. But no, joking aside, it's all about precision farming. It's all about configurability. So you know, one operator can jump on the tractor. He can program all his settings into the tractor, and then his colleague can get on it the second day, and he can have a completely different set of parameters or settings on the tractor, and they can swap them too. And it's just all about making that operator experience a lot better.
And is this something that's aimed at a particular market or a particular type of farm?
Yeah, so it would be sort of more aimed at your sort of high-end arable guys, your big dairy guys, contractors, that sort of thing. So that's kind of where it's sort of pitched and where it's aimed at, really, yeah.
Okay, so it's aiming at the big end of the market. So any idea of cost?
So that tractor there, so this is the T7 300, so it's the biggest in the range, so 300 horsepower, you're looking about 200,000 on farm.
Okay, and where can somebody go for more information?
You can go onto New Holland's website or you can contact your local Russell's depot.
Thank you, Andy Petrie from New Holland. Great Yorkshire Show back at Harrogate on the 8th to 11th of July next year. Sean Sparling's got some important agronomy advice for us in a minute. First, a quick update from the potato fields. PJP Potatoes, Colin Jackson, good morning. How's things this month?
Things are looking relatively bright, a bit better than the weather at the moment. Yields are growing quite nicely. Prices are still maintaining quite well. A little bit concerned obviously the two don't normally go together, so we're a little bit concerned about the more medium term as far as prices go. But demand, you know, has been pretty good, particularly in the processing sector over this last 2 or 3 years. They've sort of come in and mopped up some excess out of the fresh sector, and hopefully if they do that again, then everything should be good. We're seeing, you know, prices of £500 to £600 a ton for good frying gear. The first of the packing salads are being sold at sort of anywhere up to sort of £800, £850 a ton. So everything, yeah, is good at the moment in the spud world.
Good, good. And the crop in the field, are we suffering from blight given the weather over the last few months?
There has been some blight issues. It's been seen more particularly in very first early crops. Rocket, for some reason, has been quite susceptible this year. And even where we've seen rocket and other varieties, you know, Maris Bard, for instance, in the same field, it's the rocket that's been affected and not the other varieties. So although there has been some blight issues, a lot of the rocket is now clear, and we do seem to be getting through that now and onto other varieties which don't seem to have been affected.
Good. Let's hope it stays that way. All right, Colin, thank you.
Thank you.
So here now is Sean Sparling with a report from the fields and some timely agronomy thoughts. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. 36 mil of rain for me in the last 7 days. Bits of leany towels of barley as well after that 25 odd mils on Sunday night and high wind. But barley should pick itself up from that. Thankfully, I haven't seen any wheat down because obviously that doesn't pick itself up at this time of year. But it is blight weather and hutting periods pretty much every day. So don't drop your guard yet in the veg and the spud sector. So harvest looming and underway then. They've been vying peas for 2-3 weeks now, and they're yielding very well from what I've seen and what I've heard, and that always bodes well for the wheat harvest when the vining peas do well, so keep your fingers crossed. But I have to say, I'm not sure what's going on in the vining pea job this year with processors, scouts, planning teams, etc., whoever it is, but this is the first time in my 35 years at this job that I've seen fields of vining peas being bypassed within 4 days of the start of the season. Far too many fields being left as they were, or with little bits picked out and cut, leaving the rest back in the field. Someone's dropped the ball somewhere. It may well be the processor then, but with such high yields, maybe the volume of peas going into them is overwhelming their system. I don't know, but to have fields being bypassed within 4 days of the start of the season, absolutely unbelievable. Never seen that before. So feels a bit like the final approach to harvest now here. Crop senescence getting underway in winter barleys in particular, oilseed rape of course, and some of the earlier drilled, mid-September drilled wheats, particularly Dorsum and Champion, now beginning to go home in those situations. Disease playing its part in that, of course. 7 weeks or so since the T2s went on, so they've run out of steam on any Septoria and the like there. And with varieties like Dorsum having only a 6.4 rating against Septoria triticae, there's no real surprise there, I suppose. But they've got big ears, big full berries nonetheless. So if we can get rid of this dull, wet, windy stuff and replace that with warm, sunny days, I think we're in a pretty good place. Pretty much all done agronomy wise then, all bar the shouting anyways in most cereal crops. Vegetables, sugar beet, peas, beans, potatoes, a bit behind that point yet, but we'll talk about them a little bit more next week. So winter barley hurtling down the finishing straight, 25-30% moisture, very easy to find. 30% is when the grain holds that thumbnail imprint, and a lot of people asking me about whether they should be putting glyphosate on pre-harvest in the winter barleys and the winter wheats, where things like late fat hen, these big gaps and other broadleaf weeds, whether volunteer wheat in the barleys or couch, green stems of blackgrass, wild oats, ryegrass, etc., where they're all still green within the crop. And that's a matter for you and your advisor, really. But do always check with your buyer or end user to make sure they're happy with glyphosate being applied. There's nothing wrong with glyphosate, totally safe, but some contracts do specify you shouldn't use it pre-harvest, so always check that. But with winter barley moving so quickly and glyphosate likely to take 2, possibly 3 weeks to dry out that greenery to a level which is acceptable to you, if it does suddenly warm up, that barley may well be ready to go on its own without glyphosate in 7 to 10 days' time. So you do have to ask yourself if there's any value in applying it in those circumstances, in which case maybe just let the combine deal with it. So unless it's going to do the job you want it to do, what's the point in doing it? And don't forget, and the same goes for wheat, oats, peas, beans, barley, rape, linseed, and any other crop for that matter, you cannot use glyphosate on a seed crop or one that you're intending to keep seed from. Glyphosate can affect the germination and the vigour, so don't put it onto a crop you're going to use for seed. That's the first thing. The second thing is that 30% moisture is incredibly relatively important when it comes to using glyphosate pre-harvest, because if the crop's at 35 or 40% moisture, not only are you going to compromise the quality and shrivel up the grain, you're going to affect the yield by doing that, because at moisture above 30%, the glyphosate can then still translocate back to the grain. I have no wheat that's close to 30% yet, but as I said a minute ago, winter barley is there in some cases, and that's why 30% is also crucially important, because it means these crops are then physiologically ripe, and by being physiologically ripe, that means the glyphosate can't then translocate back into the grain itself. In other words, it stays in the stems and it doesn't hit or damage the seed. So 30% moisture maximum, 200 litres plus water for good coverage, especially if the temperatures are above 22-23, don't go above 23, and that will maximise the efficacy and minimise any evaporation. Remember that 150 litres of water per hectare is 3 teaspoons of water per square metre, and that's going to be going on as a fine spray, and if it's hot, well, it's going to evaporate before it does any good, isn't it? So treat according to the conditions at hand. Hope that all makes sense. Things are really going to change quickly over the next week or 10 days or so, I reckon. They should do, really, I suppose. It is the middle of July after all, and we are going to be harvesting in about 4 weeks' time, whether we like it or not. So, oilseed rape, as I keep saying, the seeds in the middle pods are what you want to look at. They'll be mostly brown with flecks of green in amongst them. Most of mine getting sprayed off now as we speak, apart from the late bit. The stuff I had swathed a couple of weeks ago, incidentally, now cutting in the shed, that seems to have run somewhere around about 3.5 tonnes per hectare. And if that's right, then I will definitely take that off the back of this year. Hopefully it's not going to encourage that grower to grow any more of the blooming stuff next year, but I won't hold my breath. Sugar beet, most crops now well over 16 leaves, so any further threat from aphids carrying virus, pretty insignificant. You can see odd plants scattered about with virus, as I said last week, but most of the yellowing out here is nutritional. So manganese, bitter salts in with the fungicides are going to do wonders for that. I've yet to find any disease in my beet, by the way, so my first fungicide, I'm planning to put that on somewhere around about the end of this month, first week of August, unless anything changes. So do keep your eye on the BBRO Cercospora forecast map. Conditions are humid enough for Cercospora, but not really warm enough at the moment. Those little white spots that you get with the brown margins. Fluapyram and prothioconazole as Caligula, that got clearance a couple of years ago, and that increased our ability to control Cercospora. And then last year, of course, we got clearance for methentrifluconazole and fluxoperoxad as Revistar, which again increased that Cercospora control another level. But in the absence of Cercospora, if it's all rust and mildew, and it is good weather for both of those, then azoxystrobin and difenoconazole as Angle or Priory Gold, that's going to do the trick with that. Just keep looking and tailor the fungicide to the problem. You can save an awful lot of money if you think about it and take your time over that decision. So, as I said last week, we've had enough rain. It's non-stop sunshine we need now. So let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thank you, Sean. We'll check the markets and hear how Open Farm Sunday fared this year, plus some post-election thoughts from Virgin Money next.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
Just over a month ago, hundreds of farms across the country opened their gates to the public for another Open Farm Sunday, the 18th year for the event. Leaf's manager Annabel Shackleton is here with us this morning. The numbers look rather good, Annabel.
We are delighted. 9,100 more visitors than we had last year. 180,000 people went out onto farm on Open Farm Sunday, which is just tremendous.
Are the farm numbers up as well, or is it just the visitors?
It really is just the visitors this year, and we are not surprised at all. You know, it has been such an atrocious year. Farmers are under so much pressure. Weather, economics, you know, we fully understand that if there are that many stresses on a business, then, you know, perhaps doing Open Farm Sunday is something to actually postpone till next year. But we do know that from the farmers that took part, they have just thoroughly enjoyed having the public onto farm. You know, comments like, you know, normally the farmyard is just such an empty place, but to have it full with people enjoying learning about farming, wanting to hear their farming story, is just such a huge boost.
Do you think we can put this increase in numbers down to anything?
Well, this year we switched up our PR campaign around Open Farm Sunday because, of course, Open Farm Sunday is the events themselves and actually getting people onto farm. But it's also a great opportunity to talk about British farming and getting it mentioned in the press and media. And on Monday, the 3rd of June, before Open Farm Sunday, we held a radio day, 44 interviews in 24 hours, which is just phenomenal. You know, our PR coverage reached over 18 million people. And that's what you need to think about, that getting involved is it's that wider benefit to the industry, and getting people talking positively about British farming is so important.
And we've done pretty well in Lincolnshire, haven't we?
This year we were celebrating our 18th Open Farm Sunday, and just amazing that some of the farms in Lincolnshire are people who've been involved for so many years. You know, Hall Farm at Sutton Estates has done 16 Open Farm Sundays, which are now 17 now. So we are so delighted for those farms that take part regularly each year, but also for the new ones. I mean, Buckminster Estate that took part for the first time this year and had 150 visitors. So, yeah. Just fantastic.
8 events in Lincolnshire welcoming nearly 10,000 visitors. Fantastic. Open Farm Sunday back next year. Thanks, Annabel Shackleton, manager at Organisers Leaf, linking environment and farming. 10 days since the election then, and we now have a party in power that most people don't instantly associate with farming, the countryside and the rural economy. Brian Richardson from Virgin Money. Should we be nervous?
No, I don't think so. And in some ways, a fresh look at some of the challenges is never a bad thing. I think DEFRA would say that the broad strategy has been set and is well set out through SFI and ELMS. I think they've obviously struggled to get uptake of the new schemes and struggled to spend the budget, which is concerning. So I think some fine-tuning of what's out there in terms of policy will be helpful. I think what farmers are very much looking for is a clear direction of travel in terms of what's going to be expected, what's going to be required around net zero, and focus perhaps on some of the grant aid to encourage investment in the sector to set that pathway forward.
Yeah, so we've not heard anything regarding budgets. I suppose it's probably a little bit too early to expect announcements on that score, but when I speak to farmers, their general consensus is we want some stability. We want some clarity. There's been too many changes and too many zigzags of direction over the last few years.
Yeah, I think that's very fair comment. Farming is a long term business and we need policy that matches that. And in some ways, the EU provided that clarity by having 7 or even 12 year rolling schemes going on. And we're now into 5 year parliamentary terms, but we're at the start of a parliament. So it does give a chance to set that out. We've come through 2 or 3 years of perhaps slightly better returns for farming. So it's not in a bad place, but we do need to bear in mind that we do have the ups and downs in farming. So we do need that basic support there, particularly for those, I would suggest, smaller farmers and those on the side or even the top of a hill. Clarity, refinement of policy going forward, key, I think, and where that fits in with the net zero agenda. I think, perhaps that took a slightly lower profile in the last 12 months of the previous government. So what is going to be expected? Where are the targets there? What do you want us to do in terms of carbon audits, etc.? And try and bring that together in terms of a focus and strategy that the industry can then get behind and move forward on.
Is farming likely to be any further up or down the political agenda, do you think?
Well, I think, it employs just under 500,000 people, but that's not a huge part of the employed numbers. It's 0.5% of GDP now. So I think, from when I was starting out in the industry, it does carry a lower level of importance. But on the other side of that, I think the one thing that the previous Prime Minister did, I think, was raise the profile of agriculture and food security. So I think it's probably got as good a profile, positive profile, as it's had for several years. And we need to maintain that going forward. And I think, the farming representatives, whether it be the NFU or the CLA, I'm sure are very focused on making sure that it does remain relevant and high up the agenda, both in terms of environmental and that food production, which is all important.
I suppose we have a little bit of continuity in that the shadow is now the DEFRA secretary, Steve Reed. Do we know much about him? Do we know where his priorities might lie?
Well, I think we have got continuity there in terms of moving from shadow into government, which is good there. I think the events and any discussions I've been involved with them have been constructive and certainly fairly positive in terms of the industry going forward. They will have their own ideas and they'll inevitably want to do some things differently. But I think they have been listening, which is good. And anything going forward does need to be understood, be practical. And I think what everybody's looking for going forward really is a level of consistency and competence. And if you think of the number of ministers in DEFRA and agriculture that we've had over the last 5 years, just having some continuity for a couple of years would be great so that we can all start to do that. And the agricultural industry and farmers, I think, are very good at understanding what's required of them, understanding what the framework they're working within, and then getting on with it. It's when you don't have that that I think people struggle a little bit. Investment in agriculture and the level of borrowing has certainly reduced in recent years. And I think a lot of that is around, well, what do I invest in? What do I need to plan for? So if we get clarity on that, I think that'll be a big help.
It is still very early days yet, obviously. And when we have the first budget, then we might learn a little bit more. But for now, Brian, thank you very much indeed for joining us again.
Good to speak to you again, Steve. Thank you.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock as usual from Louth Market auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. Starting off with the cattle, very short of numbers this week in the prime cattle ring. With this week's prime heifers all in average 247.98 pence per kilo and steers all in average 264.46 pence per kilo. Top price in the steers came from F. Wallace and Son of Biscathorpe at 269.5 pence per kilo. In the pounds per head, £1,617 exactly. And in the heifers, J.C. Scholey of Bournemouth tops at 261.5 pence per kilo. And in the pounds per head, again, J.C. Scholey of Bournemouth at £1,634.38. Moving on to the sheep, an increased entry again. Numbers on the rise still in the lambs with an SQQ this week of 308.7 pence per kilo. And an all-in average pounds per head of £136.95. Top price pen this week came from Shaw Brothers of Binbrook, £157, with other pens from the same home at £150 and £144. In the pence per kilo, R.H. Holmes Partnership of Ragby topped at 331 pence per kilo with a super pen of lambs. Moving on to the ewes, this week we have an average of £108.88. With numbers and quality very mixed, with a top price from Field Farming Company of Newark, which topped at £155. Mules topped at £111 for F. Cosgrove and Son of Hainton. Stall lambs, first show of stall lambs, topped at £111 exactly. A reminder, we're taking entries for Partly Fair, which is breeding sheep, stall lambs and breeding tups. Entry forms are available on our website, or please do not hesitate to give me a call with any questions or entries you might have. That is on Friday the 2nd of August. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And how have the grain markets done this week? Open Fields' Kit Dickinson. Good morning, Kit.
Well, good morning, Steve. Markets resumed their declines with weakness on CBOT maize acting as a brake on wheat advances. Funds are now record short for CBOT maize whilst they are increasing their wheat short position. Funds have flipped their motif long and are now short by 450,000. The new buzzword in the market is momentum, which for now is on the downside. The conflict in the Ukraine continues with hostilities being ramped up following another Russian missile attack on Odessa port infrastructure this week. Consumers both domestically and internationally have taken some cover recently at the lower prices but still have much to buy. Farm selling has been understandably slow, preferring to wait until they see what they have got before committing to further sales. As we move into harvest, we will see some clarity on both crops in the UK and across Europe, and particularly in Russia. Looking at barley this week, the UK winter barley harvest is slow to start as the recent wet weather hampers the combines rolling. It is still early, most winter barley is not fit yet and hasn't been cut, and if the weather doesn't knock it down, it should still be okay. Reports from France so far are not encouraging, with 33% harvested down from the 5-year average. Feed barley specific weights are around 54 and yields are around 5.5 to 6 tonne a hectare, normally 8 to 9. Low protein levels are reported, but it is still early and we need to wait until we get into the bulk of the spring barley area to really know more. Multi-barley premiums continue to hold strong, but the feed base continues to drop. These premiums could very quickly come under pressure if the UK and the EU comes in well, especially if farmer selling increases. Farmer selling has been slow to date, with many waiting until harvest to see what the quality is before committing any more to the market. Oilseed rape. Following the significant rally on rapeseed across all markets last week, we have seen one of decline this week. Since hitting highs of Matif of 510, the markets were susceptible to pulling back, and that's exactly what we have seen. However, we may well be surprised by the scale of the move in such a short period of time. Having lost 30 euros from the top markets, and we have seemingly settled now at 480. Aside from hitting technical resistance, there is seemingly limited fundamental reasons for the drop in price and is far more likely due to profit taking by the longs in the market at historically high prices, coupled with some harvest pressure, and there seems to have been enough momentum to move the market significantly. Looking at prices this week, July feed wheat 172 to 182, slightly higher for August off the combine at 175 to 185. Better prices in November at 186 to 196, February 190 to 200, and May 193 to 203. Milling week premiums for new crop are circa £65. Barley, July-August, 141 to 151, November, 158 to 168, February, 161 to 171, and May, 164 to 174. For malting barley premiums, please contact your open field farm business manager. And lastly, oilseed rape, August, 370 to 380 off the combine, moving forward to November at 382 to 392. Limited prices going forward, but again, please do speak to your open field farm business manager.
Thanks, Kit.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
A little warmer this week, just light and variable breezes, patchy cloud, patchy sun, bit of rain, especially Monday into Tuesday, and daytime highs in the low 20s. Last week I mentioned that you can now listen to the Farming Programme wherever you like and whenever you like on our new app, Rayo, R-A-Y-O, just by searching Farming. We've had some problems for some time with some smart speakers. The good news is there's an easy fix now. Just tell your smart speaker to play Farming on Rayo, and there will be the latest edition. Next week, we'll look ahead to Farm Safety Week, the UK's biggest village show, and the new year for Lincolnshire young farmers. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.